Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with my friend Colleen Kelly, co-founder of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. This is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other Zoom seminars and podcasts on the nonviolence of Jesus, practicing nonviolence, and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So let's begin with a little prayer as usual. So I just invite everyone to just take a deep breath wherever you are. And let's just relax and recenter ourselves. And I invite you to enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally and everyone everywhere. And let's welcome the risen nonviolent Jesus here with us. Just take a moment to ask for whatever grace you need to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and to go forward and do God's will. God of peace, thank you for all the blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus on the path of peace and to work for a more nonviolent, more just world. Bless us, inspire us, heal us, disarm us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will, to do our part to help end war, poverty, racism, greed, injustice, nuclear weapons, and environmental destruction, that we might be who you created us to be, your holy peacemakers, and welcome your reign of universal love, nonviolence, and peace on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. It's a great blessing to welcome my friend Colleen Kelly, co-founder of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. We're recording this on the 25th anniversary of the September 11th attacks when Colleen lost her beloved brother, Bill. I have known Colleen for many years and baptized her daughter, Brona, along with our friends Jack and Miriam's son, Thomas, and all their families were present, including Colleen's brother, Bill, some beautiful day, I think, in the late 1990s. As some of you know, and you'll hear it on the second part of this podcast on my story, I was asked by the Red Cross to be the local coordinator of chaplains at the Family Assistance Center at 54th Street in the Hudson River, where I worked full-time for 3 months with over 500 chaplains ministering to 50,000 direct family members, and also spent one or two days a week working at Ground Zero, talking and praying with rescue workers. Colleen is a family nurse practitioner, the mother of three who lives and works in the Bronx in New York City. Her brother, Bill, on September 11th, as we'll hear, was at a conference at Windows on the World on the top of the World Trade Towers. In the awful days afterwards, she met with other family members to seek nonviolent alternatives to the cycles of violence and war and to enhance and promote civilian protection. And they formed the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, which has been nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize. I urge everybody to go and look it up. Their website is simply peacefultomorrows.org. I'll say that again, peacefultomorrows.org. And the name comes from Martin Luther King Jr.'s beautiful quote, which I'll read. It's so beautiful. Wars make poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrows. These days, Colleen continues to work with Peaceful Tomorrows in a variety of ways, and she keeps pursuing justice and peace and accountability for the death of Bill and nearly 3,000 others during those attacks. She's also gone many times to military commissions at Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba. Colleen Kelly, welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast.
Thank you, John. It is really lovely to be here. And I love how you started the prayer about God who loves each of us infinitely. How wonderful to start off that way.
Isn't that great? Well, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me, especially at this time of year. But I thought we could talk, if you wouldn't mind, but first by sharing something with me about your beautiful family and that day of the baptism, if you want, and your brother, Bill.
Sure. And in preparation for this, John, I pulled out this great photo of Bill holding my daughter, Brona, at her baptism, which you were at, and baptized Brona and Thomas. And staring at Brona, who was pretty old to be baptized. She was 7 or 8 months old and barely fitting into her baptismal gown. But Bill has a smiling face, and it's a photo that I saved specifically for my daughter because it's one of just caring, and he's holding her, and they're looking at each other. It's really sweet. So I do remember that day with real fondness. It was over at Mount St. Vincent's in the Bronx at the Sisters of Charity's educational campus, and it was with our friends Miriam and Jack, and it was a beautiful day.
Well, tell us how you heard the news, because no one in your family knew Bill was at the World Trade Center, right?
No, Bill worked on 59th Street and Park Avenue. For those of you who don't know Manhattan, it's several miles away from Ground Zero, and he worked for Bloomberg LLP, Bloomberg before he was mayor, for the Bloomberg's company. And we all assumed that Bill was at his office. And in fact, that morning when family members were calling me at my job asking about Bill, because not being quite sure where Bill's office was, I was mistakenly reassuring them that Bill was just fine. He must be okay because he was miles away from what was unfolding down in lower Manhattan, the terror that was happening there. So it wasn't until later that morning, probably around 11:15, that it was my sister who called me and let me know that, in fact, that Bill was at the World Trade Center, just happened to be there for a one-day conference at Windows of the World. So the morning was just awful. It was awful for everyone, and it was shocking for everyone, and certainly almost everyone around the globe was watching this unfold, and it struck very, very close to our home. And although we still kind of held out hope, as many families did for several days, hoping that somehow Bill had made it out, or he'd gotten out, or hadn't quite gotten to the conference yet, but that was not true. Bill was there and died there. Mm.
Well, I also wanted to talk about your mother and my experience with her. And I'm telling this story on the second podcast, but just for listeners. And then I'll let you reflect on it however you want, okay, Colleen? So
sure.
I became very quickly the coordinator of chaplains at the Family Assistance Center, and then about 3 weeks later, it was early October, the mayor asked us to help accompany several ferry boats each day from the family center, which was at like 54th Street in the Hudson River. So we got 75 family members onto a boat, and we rowed south down the Hudson River, I guess it's east, to the site so that the family members could pray and leave flowers there and see where their loved ones died. And I helped coordinate all of that. And there I was on a boat, and you and your family appeared. And I sure remember it. I'm fine if you don't remember. And I have asked Colleen, to the listeners, if it was okay if I could ask her all this, and she said yes. So we were there on the boat, and we got to the site, and people cried and left flowers and messages at the fence right by the pile of ruins. And then we're on the ride back, going up the Hudson back to the Family Assistance Center. And I was standing next to your beloved mother when she said to me what has become kind of a mythic thing in my life, certainly the most astonishing, profound words I heard in all that time. And I've told many people around the world what your mother said. She turned to me and said, "I have no room for anger." Now, first, that was so shocking because the Afghanistan war had just started, and Bush literally said, President George W. Bush, at the National Cathedral of all places, "Stop grieving, go shopping, and you should be angry at this, and support your country and the troops as we bomb Afghanistan." And then she says to me, "Your mother, I've been praying over the families and mothers of the hijackers. Wow, what caused them to do such violence? What are they going through?" And then she looked me in the eye and said, "Bombing Afghanistan will not bring my son back. it will only increase my grief. I thought it was one of the most profound, most Christian things anyone has ever said to me. And thank you for letting me tell you about it. And let me ask you to share anything you want to tell us about her and your thoughts on what she said.
I think that the story just, I get choked up hearing it. Like, that story just sums up my mother in such a degree. It's beautiful and it's perfect, and it exemplifies her spirit so well. Like, my mom always had a big tent, and there was room in this tent for everyone. And my mother was extremely wise. She was a mother not just to us five. She was a mother to so many of our friends. And people were constantly at her house. She was a great counselor. And she was a great listener. And she was deeply empathetic to others and the suffering of others, be it grave suffering or the small sufferings. So I truly believe that's what my mom would have said. She was an extraordinary woman. And the fact that so early on she could come out of herself and be thinking about others is such a gift, not just to me as her daughter, not to my siblings, not to my family, but to everyone. Everyone should know those words, because that is the gospel message.
Yeah.
In such a deep, deep personal way. I don't know how she had the reservoir to do that, except it's something that was so much a part of her that this was her reaction. She was an extraordinary woman.
So I have no room for anger. I have been praying for the mothers of the hijackers. It didn't occur to me, I'm ashamed to say. At least I don't remember praying for the families of the hijackers. I was praying for the people of Afghanistan. And bombing Afghanistan will not bring my son back. It will only increase my grief. And she was teaching us that compassion, you know, is about widening your hearts to embrace the whole human race like Jesus. And war increases grief, not compassion. It was such a great teacher. So thank you for sharing her with me and the story. How then did you go from that to starting September 11th, Families for Peaceful Tomorrows? And how did you pick the name?
Well, I think the path was pretty set out from my mom, you know, just hearing about what she said to you on the boat, John. It did make me think a lot about civilians. I mean, I think for anyone who is a parent, you realize that your kids aren't perfect, that none of us are perfect, and particularly our children point this out to us in so many ways, and sometimes feeling almost a daily basis. So we all know about human imperfections. And so for my mom's example, coming out of herself and thinking about what would happen after the loss of her son, I felt similarly that nothing was going to bring Bill back, that Bill was gone. And nothing would bring him back. So now, having that pain and shock and sorrow, deep sorrow, sitting inside my heart, realizing that when the bombing campaign did start in Afghanistan, now there's going to be other families who feel similarly. It's not a huge leap when you're sitting with that grief. It's not a huge leap to then understand how other people might be feeling as well.
But you didn't want anyone killed in the name of your brother, right?
I did not want anyone killed in the name of my brother. No, his murder was enough. And that's different than justice. I do want justice and accountability for the murder of Bill. Mm-hmm. But that's different than other people dying because of the murder of Bill. And it just all seemed misdirected and tragically misdirected, as we've subsequently come to find out in the years that followed.
So you started meeting other families?
Well, you know, our mutual friend, Kathy Kelly,
she's an astonishing woman.
And we always get confused as, you know, are we sisters? Are we related? No, boy, I wish.
I think you are.
But Kathy Kelly was somehow organizing this Walk for Peace.
Yes, that's
from
right.
Washington, D.C., from the Pentagon site up to Ground Zero. And other mutual friends told me about this, that these family members were walking from Washington, D.C., and they were going to be arriving in New York, and did I want to meet them? And I thought, wow, I sure do. So the day that they arrived in New York City, there was an event at a Jesuit church, Xavier, which may be quite familiar to you, John, on 16th Street. Mm-hmm. And there was a speaking event, and afterwards I got to meet with these family members. And we walked from there to the White Horse Tavern. And literally that night at the White Horse Tavern, on a bar napkin, we sat down and thought, we've met each other. We are compatriots here. We have to think about how to organize and how to turn grief into action for peace. That was kind of our motto, thinking, as bad as we felt, we didn't want this to continue. We did not want these cycles of violence to continue. And that was the beginning of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows.
So thank you.
On a bar napkin.
Yeah. Tell me about the work of the group all these years now, 25 years. And before we get to Guantanamo, but just in general, what you've been doing.
Well, fittingly, the first thing that the group, and we weren't even formally a group yet, but the first thing that members of the group did was four members went to Afghanistan to meet with Afghan families. And that was in January of 2002.
Wow.
And it's quite, looking back, it was just this remarkable trip. It was a remarkable event. And they were able to meet families who had been victims of the bombing campaign and had lost their family members, and just really to point out again these cycles of violence. And so when those family members came back, we literally picked them up at the airport and drove to Washington, D.C. and began lobbying members of Congress for an Afghan Victims Fund, thinking this made sense. The American public has been so kind and so compassionate to the families of 9/11 victims. Wouldn't they also have the same compassion for Afghan families who had been mistakenly killed or harmed because of the war that had since begun? So that was kind of the first act. It was really about civilian protection and thinking about civilian harm and how to prevent further civilian harm. And then that kind of morphed into work about against the war in Iraq, the impending war in Iraq, and that our work in that arena went for almost a year. And unfortunately, the war in Iraq did start and lasted for many, many years. And then there were subsequent trips to both Iraq to meet Iraqi civilians and then back to Afghanistan, again, with this, the focus really being on civilian protection. We worked a bit in the human rights arena and how to protect human rights in an armed conflict. And also just really dealing with grief and specifically finding each other as family members who wanted to seek alternatives to war and alternatives to armed conflict as a way to achieve justice, because justice and accountability are really cornerstones to ultimate peace.
And that's taken you to Guantanamo as well. Tell us all about that. I've never been.
Well, Guantanamo is kind of a an Alice in Wonderland experience, because Guantanamo was initially the site of where prisoners in the War of Terror were brought, the first prisoners arriving there on January 11th of 2002, so very, very early on. And over the course of many years, nearly 800 men were held there. The vast majority released, vast majority released without charges. And to this day, at this present moment, 15 men remain at Guantanamo, nine of whom had been charged within the military commissions system. So military commissions have been set up since 2008 in various iterations. We're now, I don't even know what iteration this is, to be honest with you. But the 9/11 trial, the hearings for the 9/11 accused, that began in earnest in 2012. So more than 14 years ago. And we are still in pretrial hearings. We have not gotten near a trial date, although the judge did just announce a trial date in 2028. But family members, as well as NGO representatives, have the opportunity to travel to Guantanamo for a week at a time to witness and observe the military commission hearings there. So I have gone several times for specific reasons. One, so, you know, it's essentially, it's not a trial yet, but it's essentially the pretrial of my brother's murder. So it's important to witness. It's important to me to witness that. It's also important, since you can only access the naval base through specific permissions through the Pentagon, it's important to go and witness this and then come back and tell the world, to tell the country, to tell other family members about what is happening there at Guantanamo during the military commissions. And then I believe it's also really important for the accused to see family members and to see the international observer community watching the trials as well, so that they know that there are eyes on this system and that this is being watched. And hopefully someday there will be some accounting for what happened.
So here we are 25 years after 9/11, and the U.S. continues to, we waged these terrible wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, killing over a million people. But last year alone, the United States bombed nine countries, more than any time ever. And we're waging full war on Iran. We're funding the genocide in Gaza and the Israeli occupation of Palestine. You'd think we would have learned by now that war doesn't work, that this isn't bringing peace, that an eye for an eye, as Gandhi said, just makes the whole world blind, that instead we should, as you're teaching, disarm and use those funds to get at the roots of war, fund global nonviolent conflict resolution, and try to turn the corner in the world. So there's activists listening to this, and I thought I'd ask you your thoughts about organizing, since you've been doing so much organizing and speaking around the country and the world since 9/11, your thoughts about what people can do, and your hopes for, you know, working to end war.
Yeah, it's painful to say, to frame it this way, John, but I think it's an important lesson 25 years later, that we look at the war in Afghanistan and nothing changed. Nothing changed except thousands more people were harmed and thousands upon thousands of people were mortally injured. I speak of our military and the military from around the world who participated, as well as what people witnessed and during that armed conflict. And the same thing goes for Iraq. Nothing has changed. So I don't have a grand answer. I wish that there was somehow like out that through the fire, walking through this fire through the past 25 years, somehow something would come out of this, something would meld out of this. And I don't know what the answer is, except to keep trying, that there mm-hmm. will always be armed conflict until we get enough people who are like in the middle, who are sitting on the fence, who are kind of want to believe but not really sure. And I guess because this, we're talking about the nonviolent Jesus, like this is what Jesus taught, and it is hard to believe that nonviolence is the strongest tool that we each have within our own hearts and our own lives and our own communities. But until, myself included, until we all truly, truly believe that and make that leap, I think this is where we're stuck in this very, very human world. And one more push for justice, though, too, because if there's not some kind of resolution to the harm that was caused, and I'm going to say the initial harm here being 9/11 itself and the murder of nearly 3,000 people, if there's not an accounting and or justice that answers and that that realizes, that holds someone or some people to account, if that doesn't happen, then it feels like all of us who are so very human, that there's just vengefulness that sits in our hearts, mine included. And justice takes that sting out and helps take that vengeance out. And rule of law does that too, you know, that we can respond in an orderly way and hold people to account.
So I call this the Nonviolent Jesus podcast, and I wanted to ask you your thoughts about the Nonviolent Jesus and his beautiful teachings in the Sermon on the Mount on peace and universal love and compassion and justice and nonviolence, and maybe any passages or stories or aspects of him that motivate and inspire you.
Well, John, I'm not just saying this because it's you, but I truly, truly want to thank you, because you may not remember this, but years ago you came and gave a talk at the Catholic Worker, and you said one of the most profound things I have ever heard about Jesus and nonviolence. You said that in the Gospels, the last thing that Jesus said to all of his disciples before he died, all of them together, was, "Put away your sword." They were in the Garden of Gethsemane, and the high priests and elders were coming to arrest Jesus there. And the disciples were around Jesus, and one of the disciples cut off the ear of a high priest servant. And the last thing that Jesus would have said before Jesus himself was taken away was, "Stop, put away your sword." And that struck me so deeply, since that was years ago. I don't know if you remember even talking about that, but that to me has been, that's his last words to the disciples. And his last words to all of us is, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." So when I take I struggle with both of those sayings every day. But to me, that's the guidepost. And to me, that kind of, if we can all attempt to live out those two clarion calls from the God that we know is Jesus, then the world would definitely be a more just and peaceful place. So thank you, John.
No, thank you for sharing all that. You know, I have talked about that a lot, and for me, it's critical too. I'd never heard anyone say that, and I remember I was thinking it, reading the gospel. This was like 30 years ago, and I thought, wow, it's actually the last words he says to the church. And the thing I say is the first time they understood him. Because they'd all been through the Sermon on the Mount. They'd seen him the night before, just an hour before he's talking at the Last Supper about remain in my love, love one another. Mm. And shall we take up the sword? Here are two swords, it says in Luke. Put down the sword. And Mark says they all ran away. He was completely abandoned. Mm. And I think we all run away at the thought of the nonviolence of Jesus. When once we finally, when push comes to shove, as it did in Gethsemane, and their lives were in danger, he's saying, you can defend yourself, you just can't defend yourself with violence. We defend ourselves through nonviolence and love and truth. And thank you for reminding me about that, and that's really helpful to hear you say that. What are your plans for to commemorate the 25th anniversary? What's September 11th families doing?
Well, this year, since it is the 25th anniversary, we wanted to have a series of events that spoke a little bit to our values. So we're starting off at 5 p.m. at Union Square Park with speakers. Each speaker will speak to one of our 7 founding goals. And it'll be some 9/11 family member speakers, and several of our allies will be speaking, including Kathy Kelly, who helped found our group, whether she realizes that or not. And then we will be walking from Union Square Park to Ground Zero with escorts, so that traffic can be blocked and it'll be a safe walk to Ground Zero. That walk will happen from 6 to 7 p.m. on the evening of the 10th. And then at Ground Zero, we will have a commemorative vigil honoring those lives that we lost at Ground Zero. We'll have LED candles, and we'll gather around the survivor tree about 7:15, 7:30 to honor the dead and think about their memory and what they meant to all of us and what that day meant to all of us.
What sustains you these days, Colleen? What keeps you going?
Well, I just wrote a note to my family a few days ago, thinking about this, like what sustains me. And I feel like 3 things really help sustain me personally. One is my family, because they're just, I hit the lotto. I say this a lot. I hit the family lotto. I have such an amazing family. And, you know, none of us are perfect, and sure, it's rough and tumble some days, but we're all there for each other and in amazing ways as well. So that is sustaining. Community is my other sustainer, and friends and people who are really there to be supportive and have walked much of this path with me and I with them throughout the years. That has been such a huge, huge piece, having people around you who can be honest and can be supportive is for all of us. You know, that was some of the best things for all of us. And then lastly, I spend a lot of time at the Benedictine Priory in Weston, Vermont.
Oh, wow.
And the brothers there are just so wonderful and just filled with grace and humility. And I feel like I can, you know, take these memories of 9/11 itself and the ugliness and the terror and all the awful, and just kind of bring it to the Priory and leave it there at their feet and walk away filled anew. So those 3 things in different doses on different days are my sustainers.
Thank you so much. And we're at the end of our conversation, but is there any last word you'd like to offer, a word of encouragement for our listeners, for them to keep going and to keep working for justice and peace?
To help sustain each other and to realize on days when I have 5%, there's somebody else who's got 95, and then that changes the day after. So to work together towards keeping our eyes on the prize, another Martin Luther King idiom. So yes, keep looking forward.
Well, Colleen, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, and on the anniversary too. And again, on behalf of everybody, all our condolences and prayers to your family at this time. And thank you for your leadership with September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. It's just such a gift to the country and the world. Mm-hmm. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, John. Thanks for this opportunity and for bringing up that really beautiful memory of my mom. I will treasure that.
I hope she always prays for us. Well, thanks, friends, for listening to this episode of the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom seminar programs at beatitudecenter.org, where you can also sign up to receive a free e-blast with news about upcoming podcasts and Zooms. Please tell your friends and coworkers about the podcast. And a little plug here, I hope you all get my new book, Universal Love, Surrendering to the God of Peace. If you're on Substack, look for me at Father John Deere. May the God of peace bless you all. Keep on following the nonviolent Jesus on the path of peace for a more peaceful, more just world. See you next time.